found that music, but it was just something I heard at the end of a song or a movie, and I said, you know what? That's a cool little number. Riding off into the sunset. Except that we're riding into another podcast from the Rancher Radio podcast series, and I've gotten so many good emails lately, and I appreciate you sending them to me, yourrancherbookradio@gmail.com, if you want to send me something, a thought, a prayer, an idea, or perhaps a question. And someone had asked me, you know, what ways do you share the revelation? Meaning, you know, how successful have I been in promoting the Arantia revelation? And the truth is, probably not very well. Not because for lack of trying, mind you. But there's a certain element to presenting this particular revelation that proves itself quite challenging. And the reason for that is because the Arantia book is so rich that it actually is blinding. It is a blinding revelation. Because so much truth is compacted. It's like truth concentrate, right? You know, you can dissect one paragraph of the, or even just one sentence of the Urantia book, and you could extrapolate so many different concepts from it. It's almost mind-boggling, and it's not for the timid. I mean, you really have to be at a point where you're open enough, just enough, to let a little bit of the truth in when you first start reading the Urantia book, and not get overwhelmed by the sheer luminosity. So when people say, well, how do you share the revelation? I think it's common in our culture that, and perhaps it's even taught in our religious instruction, that when you know the truth, you know, share the good news. Jesus used to tell his apostles, share the good news of the reality of the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. But he didn't say, go share the news about all of the different angels that fill up Nebadon. And he didn't say, go and read all of this new truth to your fellows so that they will be so overwhelmed that they'll just fall down and start worshiping right then and there. No, Jesus actually had a lot of good instruction on how to present truth to your fellow man. Don't overburden people with information or try to dazzle them with truth. This is something I've learned. Find out what their motives are. Look for a point of entry. The way Jesus taught is the best example. And after all, who would be the best teacher but the Creator's Son, right? He taught not to cast your pearls before swine. In other words, don't waste time with people who are not really seeking the truth. They're just trying to have an intellectual exercise. And that's very common. People always tend to want to intellectualize truth once it comes at them. They want to convert it into a thought system. And I hear this expression, and I use it a lot, but it's pouring new wine into old wineskins. It's just a natural human tendency. Jesus also taught to make a person your friend before you start making them your pupil. And they may not even want you to be their teacher. So Jesus also said, don't give unasked for advice. Now to me, the method of sharing anything about the revelation or any revelation of truth, any concept, whether I got it out of the Urantia book or just in my life experience, is about listening and trying to find out if they are hungry for the truth or if they're settled in their own belief system. Or is it my ego just trying to brag about knowing about the revelation? And believe me, I am guilty of that more times than I count. When I catch myself doing that, I think to myself, what am I doing? Just trying to show how much I know? That's not the way to go. People don't, you know, there's a fine line between confidence and arrogance. Arrogance is repelling. Confidence is attractive. When you're confident in your beliefs and you can identify what a person might be able to receive at that moment, that's when you have wisdom. You know, I thought a drug addict who likes science fiction might enjoy some of the Urantia book narratives about Adam and Eve, and I was wrong. I thought a woman who was terminally ill would want to be told about the seven mansion worlds. And I was wrong. I thought a person with whom I'd known all my life was settled in her belief on the afterlife. Absolutely wrong. And so you learn along the way that people, maybe they're hungry for the truth, or maybe not. it's a challenge. And there's a reason it's a challenge. Now, there is the fact that Jesus was Michael prior to his bestowal. And that's a truth, that he is the Son of God, that the true Son of God had a pre-existing personality. And we in the Arantia community know that as being Michael, the Creator's son. Probably the same Michael that is referred to as the Archangel, but for different reasons in the Bible. To those who accepted the Arantia revelation, we know that Michael incarnated as Jesus. Now that sounds strange, but that's what the revelation says. Jesus was Michael before he was Jesus. And Michael bestowed himself upon our world, and he was given the name Jesus. And when he resurrected and finished that final chapter in his life, he went back and became a Creator Son of the highest order, having completed seven subsequent bestowals, with his human life being his final bestowal. So Michael now had the experience of Jesus to add to his spiritual portfolio, which elevated him to a very high level. Not all Creator Sons are Master Sons. They have to achieve the bestowal experience. They have to live every level of their own created orders of life, from a Melchizedek to a high order Lananandek son, to a son who lives on the mansion worlds, an ascendant son, and then finally the life of a human being. Pretty amazing, isn't it? They downstep themselves so that they can not only upstep those orders that he has created, but also upstep his own experience. And that's a spiritual truth. It's a revelation. And it's a big revelation for a lot of people who think about Jesus as just the guy from Nazareth, the prophet. So that revelation may be overwhelming to a lot of people, and you have to be able to judge whether somebody can accept that or if they're open to that. They may not be. That's why it's important to understand, is a person really searching for truth? Maybe they're set in their belief systems. Now, according to the Urantia book readers, the Urantia book says that our world is named Urantia. Now, that's a great leap of faith, but it's not contingent on faith. In other words, whether or not I believe the world is named Urantia has no bearing on my spiritual growth. It's just a word concept that they gave in this revelation. It also happens to be, what do they say? The Urantia book, the etymological roots of Urantia are based in Greek and Latin. And it actually literally translated means our place among the heavens. Now, why did the Urantia revelators choose that word? Who knows? But there is a greater truth, and this is my point. The Urantia book is a revelation, but it's a revelation to a greater truth, that our world is lovingly administered to by spiritual fellows. Think about that for a moment. How many people in our society today give any thought to the idea, the concept, or the notion that there are billions, perhaps even trillions, of individual personality, angelic beings who are assisting us and other worlds? That's such a huge concept. I'd have to seriously consider that for like a few weeks. And it took me a few years in reading the Urantia book to even come close to having that kind of a concept in my mind. So the truth matters more than the fact. The truth that Michael is the Son of God is more important than the fact that his name is Michael. See? So here's another one. It is a fact that we know Adam and Eve, according to the Urantia revelation, came here 38,000 years ago and tried to uplift us. But it is a truth that all humanity were blessed by these gifts from the Son of God, Michael, who would be choosing to come here as well, which is why Adam and Eve were the beginning and Jesus was the final of that period, the demarcation point between old Judeo history and now emerging Christian history. And that's why they're connected at the hip through the personality of Jesus. Now, it is a fact that we have a 2,000-page book, but it is a truth that the gods still send us revelations of new truth. And when I say gods, I don't mean that they're anthropomorphic gods. God is the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, the Trinity. That's what I mean by the gods. The overall plan is that they still continue with us who are receptive to the truth. And if you really want to know about true cosmology, the purpose of creation, and are willing to challenge every belief you have ever had, then there is a great journey that awaits you. And people who read the Urantia book can help you understand that a little bit better, which why I would be honored, and I am honored, to have this revelation in my life. But it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody's going to be receptive. A lot of people want to make this journey on their own, and it's enough for them to know that God indwells them. Right? And something that I've learned along the way is that you do have to trust the Spirit as if He is the pilot of your ship and you're the captain. That's a great concept. We could all learn to be better captains and trust our pilot. Now, the challenge for anyone who tries to share the Urantia book with people is that the tendency of people to put, as I said before, new wine into old wineskins. Every single person does this. We take new information and we apply it to our previously held beliefs and customs. I once had a friend who was into astrology, and I gave them the book, the Urantia book, and they started reading on constellations, thinking they were going to read about Gemini and Libra. They gave the book back to me. A fellow in-law who believes very much in New Age and chakras and shamans read the Urantia book section on shamans, the early evolution of religion and cults, and gave me the book back. So you see, you have to always meet people where they are. And in my experience, it's very rare that people are ready for the Urantia book, at least as one lump revelation. When I first started reading, there was more that I didn't understand than what I did understand. But even today, you really have to give deep thought to some of the concepts. Sometimes it takes a long time for it to sink in. It can be blinding and it can be overwhelming, but the truths of the book are ultimately what matter. And as long as the intent is to help people come closer to God or God closer to people, don't overteach. Don't overexplain. As they say, leave the audience wanting more. But don't take it personally if they are shunned or if you are shunned. Truth requires faith and faith requires commitment. That's how I see it. Be gentle and let the Spirit flow. And we know that the Spirit of Truth, the very Spirit of Jesus, unleashed on the day of Pentecost, will provide aid to you in knowing the right words, as well as the person you're speaking to, because they too, without even realizing it, have the Spirit of Truth in their minds. People ask, why is the revelation so challenging? Why is it so complex? And so I want to read an answer from paper 19, where it addresses this very issue as to the difference between revelation and evolution. So evolutionary truth that you come to through your own life experience versus revelation, which is new information being provided to you that fills in previously held truths that may have been incomplete. So the human mind, they write, would ordinarily crave to approach the cosmic philosophy portrayed in these revelations by proceeding from the simple and the finite to the complex and the infinite, from human origins to divine destinies. But that path does not lead to spiritual wisdom. Such a procedure is the easiest path to a certain form of genetic knowledge, but it can, at best, only reveal man's origins and revealing nothing about his destiny. Even in the study of man's biologic evolution on Urantia, there are grave objections to the exclusive historic approach to his present-day status and his current problems. The true perspective of any reality problem, human or divine, terrestrial or cosmic, can be had only by the full and unprejudiced story and correlation of three phases of universe reality: origin, history, and destiny. The proper understanding of these three experiential realities affords the basis for a wise estimate of the current status. So, for example, when we look at our biology, science doesn't factor in that there is a divine hand that is actually causing evolution to progress. They assume it's a natural, uncaused event. You know, the evolutionary growth of species, the progression of species, why some species survive and why others don't. Science doesn't understand, and it doesn't unify what the Urantia book adds to that equation, which is biology is driven by an innate desire to perfect. So in paper 19, section 1, it says, when the human mind undertakes to follow the philosophic technique of starting from the lower to approach the higher, whether in biology or theology, it is always in danger of committing four errors of reasoning. Number one, it may utterly fail to perceive the final and completed evolutionary goal of either personal attainment or cosmic destiny. Two, it may commit the supreme philosophic blunder by oversimplifying cosmic evolutionary reality, thus leading to the distortion of facts, the perversion of truth, and to the misconception of destinies. For example, when we just assume that all of the suns are just traveling through space on an uncharted course, that's a folly. We're assuming a truth that the universe is just blindly moving in a direction without any purpose whatsoever. That's a folly. That's an incomplete picture of reality because we don't know the destiny. We have not been revealed the destiny of this system. Number three, the study of causation is a perusal of history, but the knowledge of how a being becomes does not necessarily provide an intelligent understanding of the present status and true character of such a being. And number four, history alone fails adequately to reveal future development, destiny. Finite origins are helpful, but only divine causes reveal final effects. Eternal ends are not shown in time beginnings. The present can only be truly interpreted in the light of the correlated past and future. And so it's pretty amazing. So they're saying that the Urantia revelation is complex, and we know it's complex, and we know that we're giving you, but if we did it the other way around, it wouldn't make sense. If we started with just the history of Urantia, so right now we have paper one, which is about the central universe, or section one. Section 2 deals with our local universe, so they're moving from paradise outward, not the other way around. Other people might like it if we started with Urantia and then went to the local systems. If you look at the index of the Urantia book, you'll notice there's a pattern where it starts from the most complex, and then each subsequent paper is a diminution of that original concept. So they start from the beginning, which is destiny. They start with destiny. And then they go all the way back to the origins of us. And then when they end that story, then they tell the story of Jesus from the beginning to the end, because we already know the end of Jesus' life. And so they have really, it's two books. The first three sections of reality, and the fourth, which is a biography of Christ Michael. And in doing it in that way, we're better able to understand reality. That's what they're telling us. And so I'm going to leave you with this final anecdote from paper 22. And as we conclude this section on sharing the revelation, understanding the complexities of sharing new truth, trying to find a place where you can share someone something that you think that would improve their life and improve their relationship with their creator. I'll leave you with this little anecdote to kind of put some perspective into revelation. It's something that you would easily forget if you weren't paying attention on the issue of revelation and why sometimes it's even hard in this state to share it with people. In paper 22, section 4, it says, "You mortals who read this message, may yourself ascend to paradise, attain the Trinity embrace, and in remote future ages be attached to the service of the Ancients of Days in one of the seven super universes, and someday, sometime, be assigned to enlarge the revelation of truth to some evolving inhabited planet, even as I am now functioning on Urantia. So think about that for just a moment. That is such a conceptually beautiful picture of the whole purpose and premise of understanding why it's important to know origin, history, and destiny.